All right, we're kicking off Friday. I'm so excited. Scott Hughes is in for Mike Martindale. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Got a long list of things we're going to talk about
today.
You have
quite a list over there. You are drunk dialing people in the morning, too.
I already am. I'm trying to get a hold of the sheriff in DeSoto to find out what happened in Logansport. Trying to also get the mayor of Shreveport. They've got some pretty good news for the Cross Bayou area in Leadbetter Heights. So
your sexy U-Up's not working yet this morning,
no,
is it?
No, it's not working yet. We'll see if they get it. Also, some things I want to talk to you about this morning. I gave you a list, so I hope you did some homework.
You did. Show prep.
The 50 Cent Fireside Chat. We're going to get to that.
Last Wednesday.
Shreveport crime numbers. The state office building, the new one downtown, is more than halfway done.
There's two now.
Yeah. What are we going to do with the old one?
Well, the old one on Fairfield Avenue.
I know you're watching that.
Yeah.
Being a housing type guy. The election tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow.
Yeah, I joke. No one seems to know, but
I know.
Tomorrow the polls will open and people need to go vote. We'll say that a lot today. Go vote.
Absolutely. And what we want to start this morning with, soccer. And I know we're not a sports show, but it's a patriotic. The U.S. is in the World Cup and we look great until last night. Now, we didn't play our first team.
No, actually, if you are a soccer fan and you were watching, there's 11 people on a soccer field, the goalie plus 10 guys that kick it around the field, and we changed 9 of those 11.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all second team players except for Weston McKennie, really.
We couldn't win, lose, or draw. We wouldn't have changed who we meet in the knockout rounds. There was no impact on that at all, right?
No. We were like a Major League Baseball team that's already won the pennant in the last days of the season. We were playing AAA guys to rest our players for the playoffs.
Okay. We lost to Turkey.
We lost to Turkey. And let me say this. We lost to Turkey, but every now and then in sports, a tip of the hat to Turkey. Turkey had lost both of their first two games. Mm-hmm. They're the opposite of us. They were already eliminated from the pennant race. They're getting on a plane today to go home to a country that is very upset. You know, in America, we don't take soccer as seriously as they do in the rest of the world. We're getting there.
Yeah.
But in Turkey, they take soccer very seriously. And their country feels humiliated that they didn't even score at this point in the World Cup, I think. And so their players rose to the occasion. They played beautiful soccer.
Mm-hmm, they did. And they beat us in the final moments of the game.
Your whole problem with the clock.
Oh,
you hate the clock in soccer.
Yeah, we get to 90 minutes when the game is over.
Minute halves.
They add stoppage time at the end because of injuries.
It's a rule in soccer, so you can't just delay the game. You can't lay on the field and moan if there's a timeout and wasted time and celebration.
Sure.
So you get to the second in 45 minutes, which is called the 90th minute in soccer, the end of the game. And the clock stops technically at 90, and the referee can add more time. Now, they run it on the screen. You can see it.
Sure.
And last night, they added plus 7.
And they didn't score until plus 8.
And then in the plus 7, in the 7 extra minutes we still had to play, we were still 2-2.
Right.
And to be honest, we were the better team in the plus 7.
No doubt.
Took 3 shots. One hit the pipe. We just couldn't score.
Yeah.
And then we were a little over-aggressive. And in the plus 8, because they added a little extra time because there was some wasted time in that, give Turkey credit. They beat our best player one-on-one. They crossed the ball, and in a mad scramble, it was almost like watching a middle school soccer goal.
Yeah.
It pinged around, and somebody knocked it in.
Mm. So Turkey actually won the game. It wasn't a draw. Turkey won it right there in the last moment. And I was ready to turn off the TV and go to bed, and I'm like, oh, no. Did they really just do that? And
They did. And it was such a disappointing loss for America because the game opened up and we scored in the first 2 minutes. Beautiful goal. We were dominating. We were everywhere. We scored the first 2 goals. You think this is going to be great. Then about 10 minutes later, they scored a goal. We made a bad defensive mistake.
Mm-hmm.
They scored a goal. They are technically great. Turkey did not control the ball much, but when they got the ball, they were technically great. They passed. They found
good
the open
control.
Man.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. My takeaway was clearly, I think if we played our starters, we win the game easily.
Oh, yeah.
We were the better team most of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it was one of those games where when you sub out 9 players, a lot of our players were trying to show the coach, look at me.
I need a first round.
I deserve to play more. Mm-hmm. And so what I saw was a lot of guys that went one-on-one, one-on-three, they just wouldn't pass the ball. A guy's wide open to the right. If they just drop it off, that person taps it in.
They wanted
to be a
star.
We're trying to all make the perfect play. Mm-hmm. And as we say sometimes, perfect is the enemy of good sometimes.
Yes.
We tried to be perfect and lost, and Turkey was simply just good.
Yeah, absolutely. And our next game is against Bosnia-Herzegovina Wednesday.
Wednesday, we play in California, Bosnia-Herzegovina. And then I'll say something I learned from Nick Saban years ago. Nick Saban, Coach K, these great coaches, John Wooden, most of them always used to say, just when my team thinks they're really hot stuff, I like to lose a game. It gives me something to coach up.
Yeah.
So in a way, we're okay because we looked really good.
Right.
We're
going
to put the starting 11 out there. Pulisic did play.
Mm-hmm.
He, to be honest, except for the one play there at the end, he was unstoppable.
Yeah.
They couldn't even run with him.
If we lose Wednesday, we're out. You're out.
Lose Wednesday and stay home, as they say, since we're playing in America. But we're to the point now, starting next week, lose and go home.
Absolutely. I want to hear your thoughts on the 50 Cent Fireside Chat that he had last week when we come back. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarthy on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
All right, Scott Hughes, buddy old pal. You were out of town when Curtis 50 Cent Jackson came to town for his Fireside Chat.
I was. It kind of came together quick, I guess, because I wasn't aware of it the week before. Normally would have sent a staff person, but it just sort of happened. Had my key staff person with me in D.C., but wish I would have gone. They had quite a crowd.
They did. He kind of outlined, hey, here's what I'm doing. And I'm doing what I'm telling you I'm going to do. Was there anything that surprised you as you went back and read the coverage about it?
I guess what surprised me, to be honest, is how quick it came together.
Mm-hmm.
Normally something like that, I thought we would have seen a little more leeway on it. But to be fair, the man's very busy. I mean, he has an international schedule, quite frankly.
Sure.
And so that did surprise me. I was surprised by the turnout. You know, something happens in this town, and particularly on 2 or 3 days' notice, sometimes you get, 30 people, the same 30 people.
Yep.
He had a lot of people were interested.
Mm-hmm.
In some of the coverage I saw, what I saw from the residents who went was a lot more interested in jobs.
Yes.
They really weren't as interested as much in what he's going to do as much as what does it mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
When can I go to work? I have sent my resume. I am a recent graduate that wants to work for in this industry.
Right.
And that was encouraging to me.
Yeah. Or I have a restaurant and I want to cater some of these events, or I'm a plumber or whatever. Yeah.
Beyond that, what I would call it in the PR world is it was just sort of an update and reset. I think he's clearly heard in Orville Hall, I think, is the local guy he has here.
Mm-hmm.
Orville is available and talks to people. And I happen to know his realtor, the people he works with on property. They're my people in our organization. So we know what's going on with him. And I think that somebody, his collective team, had given him kind of a, hey, some people are getting nervous. The community wants to hear from you. And so I think it was a good move on his behalf as a PR thing to do it. And again, I don't know everything he said, but to me, it sounds like it was a little part information.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot more, we're still here. And I will say this, he showed up. He's not hiding. He showed up and said, I'm still coming.
Right.
And then there was a little part stand-up comedy, because apparently he brought a show, is what I heard.
Absolutely. I did an update at keelnews.com because I went and got from the clerk of court and the assessor all the properties he has purchased in downtown. And it's an updated list. There are a couple more added to that. And he spent about $4.3 million on downtown properties, almost 20 properties total. Is his purchasing down there, and put your housing hat on, is that impacting housing prices in downtown Shreveport at all yet?
Well, I wouldn't say it's impacting housing prices, okay? It could be impacting buildings.
Commercial property, I should have said.
Commercial property, I think he's having more of an impact on. I don't know that he's really attacking housing. Matter of fact, housing, since you mentioned housing, housing downtown's doing great, by the way. Most folks aren't really aware, we've quietly grown a little downtown housing market. And the people that work down there in that market tell me, for the most part, downtown housing sold out. You almost can't find a place downtown. Yes. And every time they open a new one, they literally sell out. And so there's always a couple of vacancies. But that's a very successful marketplace. And I think Cedric Glover DDA is now looking at turning some more buildings into housing. Mm-hmm. But what he's buying really is opportunity. He's buying buildings that many have sat vacant for a long time. Many have been distressed. He's actually knocked a few down.
Is he driving the prices of the other commercial properties up a smidge?
At this point, I'm going to say, I will make, again, without pulling records, I think it's safe to say he stabilized the market.
Okay.
Because, let's be honest, nobody's been coming into downtown Shreveport buying any properties for the most part for a number of time. We've actually had several go to auction sale. Mm-hmm. Some went to auction sale and had no bidders.
Yes.
Okay. So when you have a buyer, you certainly at least stabilize the market, and you start to make people that own property think, okay, my property may have a little more value now.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I think he's definitely done some good things for property. Has property in downtown Shreveport skyrocketed? No, because there's nothing really that's been done yet. I'm not calling out Mr. Jackson because he's certainly wanting to do something. I think, and the other issue we have with downtown property is, for the most part, it's owned by people that have owned it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've held a building for 50 years, 100 years in my family, and now there's opportunity, I don't know that I'm actually going to sell the building. And I think that's part of the problem Mr. Jackson's running into is, I think he wants to buy some more. I think he wants to buy some specific properties.
Yes.
And they're just family owned, or they've been owned, and there's zero debt on them in many cases.
Right.
So they want to hold them and benefit. But I would say he's doing good things for downtown.
If he were to be interested in one of the high-rise towers in downtown, what would that take?
He's already bought American Tower. It's one of the ones
Not yet.
I know he's shown a lot of interest in that building.
He has. How much work would he have to do on a tower like that if he's going to come in and put his corporate headquarters there and maybe put some housing in there? Would it be a lot of work, a lot of money?
The towers can be a little challenging because there's really only one new one, okay? The AmSouth complex, which ironically is the one that's gone to sheriff sale, not sheriff sale, but an auction.
Yeah.
It has changed bidders. And so that one's actually been sold. A lot of the other things in downtown Shreveport really were built probably in the 70s. I'm just generalizing here.
Okay.
And so you back up 60s, 70s types buildings, the Beck Building, some of the other ones. American Tower is an all-glass building. It's a little newer than that. And so they were built in an era that if you buy them today, they're going to require some maintenance, number one.
Okay.
They're going to require some update. They were built to different codes. I think that becomes a challenge. There are renovations going on in some of those buildings. Like Petroleum Club has done some tremendous renovations to the Petroleum Club and some of that building. With the N.O. Thomas Plaza, you know very well, N.O. Thomas Plaza was an empty building. We turned into City Hall.
Absolutely.
In the Beard Building across the street. So there's been some movement in some of those. But remember, Mr. Jackson is not the only one in downtown Shreveport.
Yeah.
There's also a huge development going on the West Edge right now with a new, what would be a new state building.
Yes.
And so many of those property owners are looking at it and saying, wait a second, my building, not only, but Mr. Jackson may be icing on the cake, because redoing that state building and putting what could be hundreds of workers and visitors every day makes everything better.
Absolutely. That's on our list to talk about today, too, because we've got to talk about that building and the old state building, what will become of that. That's all coming up this morning right here, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
A little short segment here, but when we come back, we will talk a little bit more about 50 Cent and the properties he's purchased and more about the state office building. That's going to be our topic when we come back.
Which he has not purchased, not for sale.
No, he has not. The new state office building is beautiful. It really is. But curious, I'm going to read you this one line that's in the news this morning, and I want you to ruminate on it. the Texas Board of Education is set to vote on a required reading list for more than 5 million students that includes stories and passages from the Bible. Legal fight on the way?
You're begging for a legal fight.
Why would you waste time doing that? You know,
well, they've done two things. They're doing that, which, you know, others, Louisiana has talked about putting the Ten Commandments up in classrooms.
Sure.
Texas did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're getting into Oklahoma territory.
Yeah.
The Oklahoma School Board, state superintendent, wants to use the Bible as a textbook. And again, for the record, I go to church. I'm a fairly religious person.
Absolutely.
I actually sit on the board of a religion, mm-hmm. you know, and so I'm not against that, but you're getting into clear First Amendment, you know, issues. And I think they're just begging for a fight. That same board also, I think, is looking to rewrite some of the social studies curriculum and actually position other religions as more violent.
Okay. Oh, boy.
It's a political movement.
Yeah.
Using religion, and that's never a good thing.
Okay. We're going to talk about the state office building downtown, the new one and the old one. What are the best uses for that building? Scott is a housing expert in this segment. When we do that next, right here, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Today.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back. Scott Hughes in for Mike Martindale today. And Cedric Glover, the head cheese of the Downtown Development Authority, came in last week. And we were talking about the new state office building, which he said is about halfway done. The old Jody Wagner building on Fannin. They did it a little differently. They didn't completely tear it down. They kind of gutted it, kept the concrete.
They gutted it down to the structure, the mm-hmm. concrete, the steel. They saved some of those things, which is good because that building historically had a lot of issues.
It did.
Many people had tried to do things with that, convert it, turn it to a law school, all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept running into the same problem.
Right.
It was built in the 70s. You get into things like asbestos and design. And so I think it was a wise move. They saved the structure. And they're building what seems to be a fairly beautiful building.
It looks gorgeous. Going to have at least 600 state workers there.
And that is huge for downtown. We were just talking property, Curtis mm-hmm. Jackson buying property. But anyone that owns property downtown, anyone wants to do a restaurant, that's going to downtown housing, a lot of those workers. You have said you would love to live downtown
yes.
on the water.
Mm-hmm.
You have said that for years.
Absolutely. If I could live in a condo that overlooked the Red River, and I had a little balcony overlooking the Red River where I could drink my wine, I'm moving. I'm buying it.
And we're headed there. You know, I'm a little more familiar with and so the best analogy I can give you both, because you're asking about that, and you're about mm-hmm. to ask about the old office building, which
yes.
is over on Fairfield, so that's not the same thing as we're talking about, but Baton Rouge did a very similar thing of what we're now discussing. Baton Rouge looked at its downtown office space, and they had a lot of empty buildings, especially mm-hmm. what's called the Twin Towers, okay?
Yes.
The big white ones that are right in the middle of downtown. They were mostly vacant. A lot of space, you know, space A mm-hmm. office space had gone empty, you know, people. And so they went in that building, and they, you know, they had to clear it out. They had to go span to span, and they put in high-end residential in one of those towers.
Yes.
And guess what? People are living there.
Yeah.
Lawyers, people downtown, government, lobbyists,
mm-hmm.
people that want to walk to the state capitol, but they
sure.
also have the federal courthouse there. Oh,
yes.
We have one of those.
Absolutely.
They also have we have all those courthouses.
Yes. People love that. The big question is, the old state office building is an historic structure. We're not going to tear it down. That's already in the state legislation they passed.
And we shouldn't. It's a beautiful building and
it
a
is.
Great location.
Uses. Give me some ideas. What kind of uses would you see in that building?
Well, I think what most people look at for that building would be residential. I think given where it's at, which is more in a neighborhood now,
mm-hmm.
It kind of sits on the edge of the Highland neighborhood. It's got great access to I-20. It's a tall building. I have not been up in it in years, but it's got great sight lines if you're up in the building. And it just, to me, it just screams residential. It would take some work. You have to clean out like this. It would be equivalent to what I've mentioned, Baton Rouge. You'd have to really put some work into it, clean out the floors, redevelop it. But it could be a very nice residential building.
Who would do something like that? Is it a developer with, you know, deep pockets, or is it somebody who loves saving historic buildings, combination of the two?
Yes.
Okay.
And so,
and do those people exist?
Actually, I believe what's happening in that building, and I mean to make a phone call or two to confirm this, but I believe the building has actually been given to the Shreveport Implementation and Redevelopment Authority, mm-hmm. the SIRA, which is an entity that was put together a number of years ago. And I think that they are working on the redevelopment. So that's a pseudo government, an entity.
Okay.
And the SIRA was put together and developed. Actually, Senator Beryl Peacock did the legislation. So you go back a few years.
Sure.
And its whole purpose is to take buildings like this and then to, through quote government, air quotes, because it's one of these pseudo government organizations, do a redevelopment that might not otherwise be as a cost effective, you know, and then put a building back into commerce, put vacant lots into commerce, mm-hmm. put things that back into commerce. And so I think that SIRA is working on that project, and they are trying to do that. They don't have a taxing authority, to my understanding, but they do have a bonding capacity authority, okay. where they could do some limited bonding and things. And so I think that's one of their projects. They also are going to get a lot of this adjudicated land. And it was modeled after some things in New Orleans and Baton Rouge that have similar redevelopment type authorities. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully they can be successful on that and some other projects.
Would it have any use for any of the hospitals surrounding that? Do you see any possible uses for them so they pick it up and use it for maybe housing for long-term patients, families, or whatever?
Well, they could. It's a big building. I think it's a little bigger than that. I mean, the truth is the hospital probably has space in the hospital to do that. Matter of fact, years ago we looked at when some of that hospital actually closed, we looked at some of the options for that. But, in the hospital, of course, contiguous is Christus Schumpert mm-hmm. is right there. And a lot of it, if you've not been in that part of town lately, a lot of the area around there has kind of been cleared out. It's kind of a little more free. Some land is there. So much like you're talking downtown, the anchoring of the new office building will bring 600 people, workers, right. which then will lead to residential. I think this is kind of the reverse. I think the best use of that piece of land, because years ago when it first opened, there were hundreds, if not 1,000 workers in that building.
Sure.
And now no one's there. The state has moved their people around. And so if you were to put several hundred people living in that building, that would create more need and demand in that area and be very supportive of downtown. It's close.
Sure.
Be very supportive of the Lyon Avenue corridor because it's all right there. And again, there may not be a more central location in Shreveport than that location.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting to talk about that. We're going to talk more about possible revitalization of the Cross Bayou area. Hopefully we can catch up with the mayor this morning on that because they got some really good news on that.
Did he get some money?
They did. They got some green stuff from the feds. We'll talk about that coming up after 7, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back, and I told you both I have a dumb question for you both, because I did something yesterday that made me feel like I'm not a grown-up anymore.
Get ready with the button, Ruben.
Do you get to a point in life when you're not a grown-up anymore?
I've been there.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people never get to the point they are a grown-up.
I don't know if I ever did. I can't remember one
you
time.
Some days you don't feel like a grown-up?
Oh, yeah. No.
I think you can be an adult, but not necessarily a grown-up. There are two different standards.
I got home yesterday, and I have food in the fridge. I have, I have whatever I want in the fridge. I didn't want any of it. All I wanted was peanut butter and jelly.
Ooh.
That's all I wanted. Okay?
It's hard to beat a PB&J.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But I did I made two peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But
how many scoops? Are you a heavy peanut butter person?
Well, here's the thing. We had a rule in my house as growing up. It was kind of a thin, thin layer of jelly. Real thin layer of jelly. And decent amount of peanut butter because we didn't, there were six kids. If all of us took these big globs of jelly, I globbed the jelly yesterday. And I globbed it. And I globbed the peanut butter. And I looked at that sandwich and you got jelly runneth over now. And I looked at, and I thought about my mom, and I thought, she would be kicking my tail for as much jelly as I put on this thing. Is there a rule? Should there be more peanut butter to jelly? Should it be equal?
The ratio?
Yeah. Should it be even or no?
No, I don't think it's even. What do you think, Ruben? I mean, I think more peanut butter is the rule.
I would say more peanut butter.
Yeah.
I would generally,
don't go away.
Generally, I would go more peanut butter.
It's called a peanut butter sandwich. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
And so I overdid the jelly yesterday. And you know why I did it?
Why?
Because I wasn't allowed to do it as a child.
And you know what, Aaron? Me and you live alone now.
Yes.
There are no jelly rules anymore.
Thank you.
No more jelly rules.
If I want to slop the jelly on my peanut butter and jelly, I'm going to slop it on there.
We only had one rule in my house.
Well, what?
Don't lick the knife. And that was hard because you wanted to lick the knife.
Absolutely. We didn't like if you were crossing the knives, going from the peanut butter into the jelly and leaving trails of eating. You know, we didn't like that either. Yeah. But grape jelly or strawberry or what's your top? Do we have time?
We have time.
Okay. I did grape.
I loved them both, but I'm late in life allergic to strawberries now. So I'm stuck with grape.
Okay.
We didn't have jelly. We weren't rich.
You just had peanut butter sandwiches?
We were just peanut butter, folks.
You did peanut butter rollovers.
I'm not a jelly. I love jelly. I love strawberry on other things. But I'm not a jelly person. I'm just a bread and peanut butter guy.
What does it say about you, though, if you're craving a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's never happened before in the last 10 years, but I went home and that's all I wanted.
It's a childhood comfort food. But, you know, in my house, we did peanut butter and honey more than peanut butter.
Yes, yes. Honey, I would do honey over jam.
Right. Okay. Are there honey ratios?
You kind of have to with honey.
It's too much,
If you do too much honey, then you're in for a horrible mess.
Yeah. This is groundbreaking radio we're doing here today.
You could go Elvis on us.
No, that's not happening.
No bananas?
That's not happening.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you very much.
1017 FM, 710 Kiel. We are back. 1017 FM, 710 Kiel. My friend Scott Hughes in for Mike Martindale, and we're joined on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline by Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Sure, good morning.
Got some good news. Looks like you've gotten a grant from the EPA to do some work across Bayou and Leadbetter Heights. Explain what you've gotten.
Well, we had applied. We have some property that we own and some property adjacent to it along Cross Bayou on the south side of Cross Bayou. This is going to involve the Deanna Produce building that the city owns.
Right.
And some adjacent property and then some property in Leadbetter Heights and perhaps along Texas Avenue. We're not necessarily restricted to those areas, but that was our targeted area for the grant. So we're very excited about it because we know, or at least we suspect in that area, there was some industrial activity in that area a long time ago. And we suspect that there is some contamination in that soil. So to put it back into commerce and be able to do something with it eventually, we need to clean it up.
Good morning, Mayor. This is Scott Hughes. Good morning. So if I understand you, is this more of a brownfields, what we'd call a brownfields type grant to help you physically clean something up, not a planning grant?
It is not a planning grant. It is for investigation and cleanup.
Okay, and that would be for the property that only the city owns. Could it be for property that other people own as well?
I'm not entirely sure of that, but I believe the answer is yes.
How soon do you anticipate that to start? And will the city have to spend some money on top of the $1 million from the feds?
There's no local match to this. So this is $1 million that we don't have to put any up for.
Okay. You know how old I am. You know, I go back a minute. We passed a bond issue in 1996.
She's been doing research this morning, Tom.
You know,
be ready.
You know, I have this in my back pocket. I always have. We did a bond issue in 96. To purchase land for use for a public park on Cross Bayou. We have purchased some land. I think we purchased that Deanna Produce Building under Mayor Perkins. We have purchased Correct. Some other land. And we still have, at last report, I think about $3 million or $2.5 million from that 96 bond issue to purchase land and build a park on Cross Bayou. A, are you aware of that? And B, are we headed in that direction finally?
The answer to A is yes. The answer to B is what we'd really like to do is to combine that with some other development that would produce a park, but would also might also produce some other kinds of development along Cross Bayou.
Like, give me some idea, because I love that part of that. When the city owns waterfront property, I am so excited about that. What kinds of things would you like to see there?
Well, one of the things I'd really like us to possibly see is a hotel. You know, that Deanna property is right across the railroad tracks from the Hilton, and it was something like a hotel there would, or other developments. You know, we seriously looked at selling or long-term leasing the Deanna property to a produce company for a market and a headquarters. Unfortunately, the Deanna building is not structurally sound.
Mm-hmm.
That's what caused that deal to fall through, is that they just couldn't use it. So we need to look for something that would perhaps complement the convention center. But we're open to any ideas that somebody may have if they bring their own money.
Right. A hotel would be financed privately, I assume. It's not going to be a city-financed hotel.
Correct.
Do you have any nibbles on that yet?
Oh, I have. There are always people who are expressing an interest, but we haven't had. I would say the bobbin has bobbed a couple of times, but it hasn't ever gone under the water.
And so, Tom, you're talking about and Cross Bayou and developing that area. So is this in a way to support the convention center? I know the new state office building is sort of just up the road, nearing completion.
Right.
Is that the stretch of the bayou you're looking at, that south shore along that part of downtown?
Yeah, it runs along and behind the convention center. You know, the McNeil Street, for example, one of the things that we might do at some point is to improve that little half a block of McNeil Street that runs behind the convention center. There are lots of ideas. This makes those ideas come more to the forefront, because we can do something. But we now can do something that might help somebody develop that property.
Would the city be, if you got some folks that were nibbling on it, maybe 50 Cent, maybe, you know, who knows, would the city be interested, once you get it cleaned up, because nobody's going to come in and buy it if it needs cleaned up, but this, you hope, will take care of the cleanup and make the property more marketable, I would assume.
That's what our hope is, yes. We hope that this will clear this property and enable us to make it available for development, or to develop it ourselves. As you said, there is money in there for a park. I would rather use that park as leverage for a greater development.
The Deanna Produce property, we spent, I think, $460,000 on it. Do we know the value of it now? Is it worth more, less?
I don't know. I don't know what it's worth. I'm trying to remember, in connection with the other proposed deal that we were working on, I don't remember whether we had it appraised or not.
Okay.
But that unfortunately that building is going to have to be demolished.
So at this point, that's more of a land deal now. Is that what you're saying, Tom? The building's not structurally salvageable,
yeah,
but the land holds value.
Correct.
How long would you think, Mayor, that it's going to take to do the cleanup and any remediation that's needed?
I don't know. I'll have to talk with our environmental manager, Wes Weiss, Weich, and see what it will take we've got to run some, we got to do some cores and run some tests and that kind of thing to find out exactly what needs to be done. But we're going to move on it as quick as we can.
And I guess last question, Tom, we're getting away. What kind of timeline you're on? When do you get the money? When do you have to spend it by?
We will get the money shortly. You know, after you get this grant, then you've got grant agreements and those kinds of things. So we've got to do that. It may, I may have to get a council resolution to accept the grant, and that will move forward. I would hope that we would have the money before the end of the year and begin to work on it.
Mayor Tom Arsenault, thanks for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Sure enough. Thank y'all for calling.
Thanks, Mayor.
1017 FM, 710 Keel.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Surprised to hear him talk about a hotel down there on Cross Bayou?
Actually, I'm not.
Okay.
Because, number one, hotels are being built all over the country. We have some companies in town and in North Louisiana that regularly build hotels all over the world. I mean, the surprise is we can't get one hotel finished in Shreveport. We won't talk about this morning. But there are hotels going up, and I think that it would be great to have more hotels. If we go back, and I'm not criticizing anybody, but if we go back when the city built the convention center.
And the Hightower Hilton.
When the city built the convention center,
yeah,
there was probably a mistake of sorts made just because of the financing and we just couldn't afford to build the hotel big enough. And I travel all the time, as you know. Mm-hmm. I go. And so when you start looking at, I'm going to play Stacey Brown now, I guess, for a second. But when you start looking at convention tourism, going to things, there's two things they look at a lot. Are you a primary airport? We're not. We can't change that. We're not Dallas or Atlanta or some fly-in market. We're a tertiary market. The second thing they look at is, do you have 500 hotel rooms contiguous to your convention center?
Mm.
We do not. We've never had that.
Yeah.
And so if the city's looking at doing another hotel, it wouldn't be the same hotel, but it's right there.
It's right there.
And if we can do another hotel to support the convention center, that makes the investment in the convention center that much greater, because now we can be more attractive to these mid-sized conventions that always require 500 hotel rooms contiguous to your convention center.
Right. They've got a lot of people coming and they want the hotel right there.
And let's be honest, I mean, I love historical buildings as much as anybody. Work for an architectural firm in this town. Have lived in the Highlands, South Highlands neighborhood area. But I also heard two other things. The Deanna Produce Building is no longer usable as a structure.
Right.
And so that's a land deal now.
Yeah.
And that's a valuable piece of land. And what I really heard is this is a land deal. A brownfields grant is to clean up places where 100 years ago, maybe there was an oil mark, you know, something there,
sure,
a shipyard, and there's industrial, you know, waste there. We got to clean it up. But he also said something that I heard was extending one of those streets kind of past the convention center. And so to me, this is about opening up that land on the South Bank between the convention center and the bayou.
Mm,
and if you go up a little farther, we're investing a lot of money in a new state office building.
Yes, we are.
Which is about a block or two from the water. It looks like we're creating that strip that's never been developed on that part of town.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
That's
planning. You know what I liked hearing from the mayor was that, A, he knew about the 1996 issue.
You thought, Mayor, if you're listening, she thought she had you.
I thought you wouldn't know about it.
No, he surprised you. You're the shock. You thought you had him.
I'm impressed because there are prior mayors who shall remain nameless who didn't know about the 96 bond issue.
He knew about the 96 bond issue.
He did.
He knew about the Deanna building.
He does.
I also heard it slipped in there as well. He shared that there is activity that goes on that we, the citizens, aren't always aware of.
Yes.
They've had somebody looking at some of these properties, and it didn't work out because of the brownfields issue.
Right. You got to get it cleaned up, and that's what they'll be working on now. And then once they get it cleaned up, it's a marketable property. Interesting to hear the hotel idea.
There's a whole part of downtown that sounds like there's a lot going on.
Do you think we ever get our park on the Cross Bayou?
A park is a relevant term. I think you're going to get some green space. I think if we start looking at moving towards the water first, you know, you end up getting green space. And I wasn't in the town. I'll give an analogy. I wasn't here, but I understand it. This is more of a Hussey. John Hussey's funeral's tomorrow. I think you're going.
Yes.
But if you go back, we didn't always have the Shreveport Riverfront.
Right.
We didn't always have the Clyde Fant Parkway. And I'm told, I was not here at the time, that where we now have casinos and the exposition hall and that beautiful road and all the jogging trails, which I think is a huge linear park.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
To use that term. Mm-hmm. That used to be homeless people lived down there. That was a place you didn't go.
Yes.
And it took development. It took investment. And now I look at the riverfront, both sides.
Yes.
Because when I got here, there wasn't the Arthur Ray Teague Parkway.
Mm-hmm.
And now both sides is a linear park.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And I see the linear park going up across Bayou. And I think you may ultimately get your park, but not the one you want with swing sets and slides.
Green space would be good. I'd be happy with that. I would be. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Back, and it has been a late night in DeSoto Parish. Logan Sport Sheriff Jason Richardson will join us next to talk about the explosion and what happened at the Logan Sport water plant. That's coming up next right here on Kiel.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
And on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, we are joined by DeSoto Parish Sheriff Jason Richardson. First off, there was some sort of explosion, chemical incident at the Logan Sport water plant. Tell us what happened, when this all happened.
Sure. So early yesterday morning, the water plant was taking a delivery of a chemical that was to refill one of their tanks. Apparently, there was some chemical that was already in that tank that was not what they were refilling it with. It caused that chemical reaction that ultimately led to the tank exploding. Ended up creating, I believe, what's called chlorine dioxide, and turned kind of into a solid, but it was off-gassing and created quite a plume for a short period of time. And ultimately, there were four individuals that were fairly close to the explosion when it happened. One was pretty severely injured, took the brunt of the explosion, and the other three were also exposed in a much less severe way. And so all four of those were treated. And because of it was outside of the water plant, it was completely separate from the internal workings of the building. The water plant was not affected until later in the day, when, because nobody was manning it, the water plant shut itself in.
The water service was interrupted for a little while. I'm amazed that we got water service back restored already.
Yes. Yeah, water service was only down for about an hour. We already were in the decontamination process when the water service ceased, and the scene was made safe quick enough for us to get some other water plant workers from some other water jurisdictions to bring the plant back up.
Was this a water, the water tank that exploded, was it an on-the-ground water tank? Was it an in-the-air water tank? Can you describe it for us?
Yeah, it was a fiberglass-style 1,500-gallon chemical tank that was on the ground.
And it normally would be used for what?
This one normally has is a chlorine-based chemical in it, and what was introduced into the tank was a polymer that obviously does not react in a positive way, and that it was a mix-up of chemical delivery. Obviously, we're not 100% certain where that mix-up happened.
Right. They
had ordered that chemical was supposed to show up, but there was another chemical that was supposed to show up as well. And so they're working through all of those things at the moment.
Can you describe the explosion, how loud it was, how far away it was felt, et cetera?
Yeah, it was pretty violent. My understanding is we had reports for at least a mile or so away of where it was felt and heard, and so it was obviously a pretty violent reaction.
The tank completely destroyed, I would assume.
It absolutely.
Okay.
You can You can just tell where it was. It's completely gone.
Now, that raises, I mean, this is not my wheelhouse, so you help me. It may not be your wheelhouse either. How can a water plant operate when one tank that they use every day is destroyed?
This was an external storage tank.
Okay.
So they have internal tanks that this tank refills. And so they're able to bring, they have some chemicals still within the building that would feed the water system. And obviously to replace this tank is not going to be that difficult. It's something that can be done relatively quick, but they're still able to operate.
Boil advisory, I assume, for Logan Sport still?
There is.
Can you describe, Sheriff, we're talking to Sheriff Jason Richardson of DeSoto Parish. Can you describe the kinds of injuries? Were the injuries burns? Were they chemical related? What were we talking about?
Yeah, they're burns. Some were direct contact with the chemical after the mixing took place and that chemical reaction happened, and it turned into kind of like a sludge. So those actual contact burns are obviously some were affected by that, and then obviously the inhalation of it, which was kind of has the same effect internally.
Were these employees of the water plant, all four of them?
They were.
Okay. Was there a need for any evacuation nearby because of the and was there a chemical plume that y'all were concerned about?
So we evacuated. There were houses within several hundred feet of the plant that were immediately evacuated, and the wind was kind of in our favor yesterday. Was moving. There was a plume, a quite large one, immediately that dissipated fairly quickly, but it was moving into kind of a rural area, and so this plant sits on the edge of town. Had the wind been from the north to the south, it would have been. We've had to evacuate the entire town of Logansport and a portion of Haslam, Texas. But the wind worked in our favor, and it dissipated really quickly.
So only the numbers of evacuees, any idea on how many homes?
It was less than a dozen.
Wow. Okay. Curious, too, Sheriff, you know, when you have something like this happen where there's an explosion, do you guys have to call in help for equipment for something like this, or do y'all have everything you need in DeSoto to manage this, or did you have other agencies come in to help?
Yeah, of course we had LSP hazmat that comes in situations dealing with these types of things. We have hazmat certified people within DeSoto as well, and they do have equipment to be able to respond immediately into those areas, you know, the air tanks and all of the hazmat suits that are required to immediately be able to go in and evacuate somebody out of there. As far as cleanup, most of the time those are third-party private companies that are hired by the state that have contracts with the state for that type of cleanup, and that's what happened yesterday.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. What now? Got to do cleanup and making sure that there's no ground hazard, I guess, right?
Yeah, cleanup is completed. Okay. It was completed yesterday. One of the other concerns was this is the water intake for this water plant is in the Sabine River, which sits just a few hundred feet away from the plant. And so that was a concern as well yesterday. It was not allowing any leaching into the river itself. And so that fortunately, that was not an issue either.
Wonderful. Sheriff Jason Richardson, DeSoto Parish, thanks for being available. I know it was a late night. We appreciate your time, sir.
All good. Thank you.
You bet. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
I'm going to do something I normally... Yeah, I would do this. I have...
No dancing.
No dancing. I do want to say tomorrow at 11 is the funeral for a former mayor, John Hussey. And I will be there. I've got a busy day. I've got starting in the pool in the morning, then the funeral, and then an event that I dearly love in this town, and it's been going on for years.
Does it involve food?
Yes. And if you've never been, I strongly encourage you. It's the Gentleman's Cooking Classic.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. It's a benefit for Southern University Shreveport. And what happens is, you know, lots of local politicians come out and cook, like the sheriff and the mayor and, you know, people.
That's the whole setup. They get these VIPs to come cook. Mm-hmm. They ask other VIPs, that would be you, to come judge. And it's a great fundraiser and a big event.
Oh, it's a huge event. Now a lot of the times the VIPs have somebody helping them. I mean, they have a chef that's helping them. I think the mayor and his wife actually do their own cooking. I may be wrong about that. And I think the
police chief cooks his own stuff.
I think you might be right. I think there are a few of them that cook their own stuff. And it's great seafood. They have all kinds of great food. I'm not sure the price on the tickets, but I think the doors open at 6 tomorrow evening.
It's open to the public. Where is it?
It's at the convention center downtown. I strongly encourage you, if you've never been to this, this is one of those deals where you're going to have some, the food is unreal.
Who does it support again?
Southern University Shreveport. And they've been doing it forever and ever and ever. And I love judging it. And we do categories, like I may be the judge for the main dishes, or I may be the judge for the sides or the desserts.
The peanut butter and jelly sandwich division.
I hope I'm not the peanut butter and jelly division, but I get to taste it all. I mean, the judges all get to go around.
You go early. The judging actually is before the doors open.
Yes, we do all the judging, and they tally up our results.
So people may or may not actually even see you.
I might not be there because it's going to be a long day for me.
They shouldn't go to see Aaron McCarty. They should go to support Southern University and the great food.
Yes. And, you know, when we have events like this that have been, and this is, I may be wrong, 30th year. I may be wrong about that. Somebody can correct me. But they've been doing this a long, long time. And it also puts these people that you think of, these politicians, you see them in a different light.
It humanizes them.
Yeah, and that's part of the fun of this event. You'll see people, and they'll be cooking, they'll be serving.
They'll have a little apron on.
Yes, they absolutely will. And it's a different kind of frame of mind. So I strongly encourage you to go if you can get tickets now. I think they're still for sale.
Do me one favor.
Sure.
If you get there and the mayor has on an apron that says "Kiss the Cook," I don't think it's an invitation. I just think it's just what he wears when he cooks.
He will cover that up if he sees me. I promise you. Definitely. In fact, if you missed our interview with the mayor last hour, we're going to replay that at about 8:40 this morning.
It was good.
Yeah. Talking about Cross Bayou and the redevelopment plan
really
there.
Really a brownfields type grant, $1 million to help clean up part of downtown.
We love
and
that.
And a few other areas as well.
Absolutely. When we get federal money. Scott and I are going to kind of break down tomorrow's election day too. Don't forget to vote tomorrow. We will do that coming up after 8 o'clock too, right here on 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Talked much about the election, which is tomorrow.
I was hoping we could avoid it, but let's do it.
No, we have to do it. Scott okay. Hughes in for Mike Martindale. The big Republican primary runoff. John Fleming, Julia Letlow. All the latest polls show it's going to be way closer than people expect. But the polls before the May election showed completely different numbers than what we got. So who believes the polls, right?
Well, and to be fair, we talked a little yesterday about this. You know I've never been a polling fan.
Mm-hmm.
Polling is point in time. I like trends. And so I'll go there. The trends indicate that Fleming might be competitive. You know, I mean, Letlow surprised everybody and got 45%. That was a shocker.
Sure.
Fleming, kind of edges out Cassidy when you really look at the numbers. And he got second place and Bill Cassidy was out. And that was a shocker.
Mm-hmm.
Not stunning because we all know why he was out. But it's the first time you've seen an incumbent sitting U.S. senator not get renominated.
Yes.
That's history. And so now we're to this race. And the numbers would say that Fleming didn't have a chance. And I still don't think he's going to win. For the record, I've said that I'm staying with that.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think Fleming is going to win. I think it could be a 10-point margin on her side. But the polling has shown that Fleming is probably being more competitive than we thought he would be. And I think what's going on is we don't know what's going to happen in a closed Republican primary. What we're seeing is turnout is plummeting. There was a lot of interest in the first round, just for various reasons. Among others, many people wanted to vote Bill Cassidy out. That just brought people to the polls. Well, the anti-Cassidy vote doesn't seem to care who their next senator is.
Why are they not passionate about one of these guys?
I don't know. They don't seem to care which one of these replaces Bill. They just wanted him gone. So now those that care about who the U.S. senator is going to be from the Republican side.
Right.
They don't really seem to be caring either. I think turnout could be 15%.
Oh, Scott, that's so depressing to hear that.
And then on top of that, because we're talking polling. You want to talk polling?
Yeah.
We're talking polling. When you look at polling, now what do you poll?
Right.
Are you polling just Republicans? It's a Republican closed primary.
Sure.
How do I account for people like you, independent voters that said, I'm going to caucus the first time? Because I want to be in this Cassidy race. Do you come back? You personally will. You vote every time.
Sure.
But do people like you come back because you caucused? Maybe not. You might not care as much. Do other people, do independents that didn't vote non-party, that didn't vote the first time, do they decide to caucus this time? That's hard to poll.
Right.
So I fall back and say, what do I see? My eyes tell me she's winning. She knows she's winning. She's acting like a front runner. She's not coming on your show. She's not doing anything that hurts her. And she's rolling out a new endorsement every day.
Mm-hmm.
Who'd she roll out yesterday?
Skip Bertman.
Yeah.
I think the president did a deal with her last night.
So she's acting like a front runner. I think Fleming, I'm not saying he cannot win. I'm saying he's acting like a guy he knows he's in behind and he's doing everything. He's Turkey last night playing USA.
Let's put him on the scale. Let's put him on the conservative scale, liberal conservative scale. Do we have Cassidy over here on the left side? How close is Letlow to him? And then how close is Fleming to her?
Okay,
are they real close together, bunched together, or is there a chasm?
Let's start with, I think you said Cassidy on the left side. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So
people are going to say Cassidy's a liberal. They call him a rhino.
So let's start with this. To be fair, if you're putting him on the political scale, the political spectrum,
right?
We are only talking about the right half of the line.
Yes.
All three of these people are conservative.
You bet.
I've said this before. Bill Cassidy, except for one vote, in his entire career, is a conservative by every standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Heritage Foundation, et cetera. He's a perfect voting record. He voted with the president 99% of the time.
Right.
What people were mad about was one vote that Bill Cassidy cast.
So you're putting Letlow left of him?
I'm putting Letlow right where Bill Cassidy is.
Okay.
Because but people are mad at Cassidy because the impeachment vote. But if you're really fair, he is a conservative. He always has been.
Mm-hmm.
His voting record, John Cornyn, all these people that, you know, some people are mad at, they have perfect conservative voting records. That's not the issue. They're not in Congress. The issues they're not in Congress are personal.
Yes.
Okay. Personal, political. I think Letlow is in the same political spectrum of Cassidy. If anything, to be honest, Letlow might be a little left of Cassidy because she came from academics.
Right.
You know, she wasn't a politician that worked her way up, you know, through other elected offices. She basically, because of a tragedy, and it was, you know, she is asked to serve in her husband's place.
Mm-hmm.
And she's done an admirable job. And she has fought for rural farming and since she's been a congresswoman, she's been a very conservative person.
Right.
Enough that the president endorsed her. Now, wherever you put those two, which I think is right of center, we'll go there.
Absolutely,
they are right
of
center. No question.
Sure.
Wherever you put them, you move the marker as far right as you possibly can.
Really?
To get to Fleming.
So he's way over there on the right.
This is Scott Hughes' opinion. There's no question Fleming's conservative. He is.
So why is he not running away with the Republican votes?
Because the country is not that far right. A part of the party is, you know.
But aren't those more likely to vote?
They're going to vote. We'll say that. And that's so you and I were talking briefly off air. I tried to, you know, analyze the first round. And I looked at it and I said, because I'll be fair, I thought Fleming would lead the first round because of what we're talking about. And he did not, by far.
And you thought Fleming would lead the first
round? I thought Fleming would lead the first round. I was on record of saying that. I like to be accountable. I'll hold myself accountable.
But you thought Cassidy would be there?
I thought Cassidy would beat Ledlow. That was my prediction. I was wrong. I don't have 100% vote. You know, I'm pretty good, but I don't get 100% right.
Right.
And I just thought that because the reason I did Cassidy, and I was honest about this, and I wasn't comfortable with it, but I'd never seen a sitting U.S. senator not get renominated. Mm-hmm. That's history. So I had to put Cassidy in there somewhere, and I thought Fleming would lead because of this conservative vote. Right. It wasn't there. And as I looked at the numbers, what I came to is I made a classic mistake of someone that does what I do. I let a bias influence me. And the bias, when I saw the final numbers, was I live in North Louisiana. Fleming ran very well and will run very well in North Louisiana.
That brings me to my next point.
But he ran horrible along I-10.
Yeah. One of these two, if they were win and become the next U.S. senator.
We win either way?
Yes. This will be our first senator from North Louisiana in how long? When's the last time we had a senator representing North Louisiana?
Well, they're going to be legendary. It's going to be Jamin and Johnson, one of the Longs.
Yes.
You know, now, and
that's
and
a long time ago, Scott.
And I guess you're counting Letlow living in North Baton Rouge as being North Louisiana.
She's from the Monroe area.
It's a political joke, but yeah, she's from the Monroe area, but now she does live in the North Baton Rouge area.
But it will be kind of nice to have a senator who knows about North Louisiana and knows what our problems are and our issues.
It's clear. Either way, John Fleming is basically from Webster Parish, a Minden guy. He's certainly known in North Louisiana. And like I said, he ran very well. He carried North Louisiana. That's his strength. And so if you're in this part of the state, you're seeing a lot of Fleming stuff.
Right.
But I've checked with my friends along I-10. You mentioned that Letlow rolled out the Skip Bertman endorsement. She's been rolling out an endorsement every day.
Yes.
Sheriffs, police, jury, chiefs. Sure. She's got a lot of support along I-10. And we hate to acknowledge this a lot, but that's where the people of this state live.
Yeah.
That's why she's likely going to win this. But while she may jokingly live in Baton Rouge these days, yes, she's no question a Northeast Louisiana Delta region
person.
And very good for rural farmers. We'll do good either way. And actually, the guy that's going to win on the Democratic side, Jamie Davis, also a North Louisiana guy.
Wow.
So
okay.
Even if the Democrats make a miracle and win this, we're getting someone from North Louisiana.
Interesting. Polls open 7 in the morning, open till 8 tomorrow. Don't forget to vote, please. 1017 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back, and we're both disappointed. Scott Hughes is in for Mike Martindale, and were you up late watching the game? Did you stay up late to watch it, the USA men's team?
I was up late after the game trying to figure out what happened. I've watched the final play 10 times.
We were tied until the 97th minute, and it was in stoppage time, and then Turkey scores a goal with, seconds left in the match.
That's soccer.
What the heck?
And for those that may not have watched it, first of all, no need to panic. We are panicked because we're big soccer fans and we wanted to win. And there was a huge crowd.
Yeah.
And it was one of those made-for-TV moments where you just want to embrace Team USA and hug them and carry them off the field. And we sweep in the next round as winners. And then we lost a game to Turkey, who hadn't won a game yet. But the loss doesn't matter except to our psyche.
Yes. Because we were already in the next round. This doesn't impact where we're placed in the next round.
We're going to play Bosnia-Herzegovina in Los Angeles or San Diego, one of those cities over there. All that's already set for next Wednesday.
Right.
So this was actually 9 of our second team. There's 11 players in the field. The coach put in 9 subs.
And you could tell, they looked okay, but you could tell they were not gelled.
We scored 10 minutes in the game.
Yeah.
We're partying.
They were not gelled. They were playing more as individuals than as a team. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think they were all trying to make the starting roster.
As I watched it, what I saw was, first of all, if you know soccer, we had 60% of possession.
Sure.
We were the better team. We were better skilled, even with our second team. But our guys were trying to beat the first guy, the second guy, then make the spectacular spin and shot. And they had a simple pass and a knock-in goal. We hit the pipe twice. We just couldn't put the goal in. We were trying to show the coach, play me.
Right.
It was about me. It wasn't team, to go to John Wooden, the most famous coach of all time, I think. It wasn't about team. And I'll give Turkey credit for a team that lost their first two games, for a team that's getting on a plane to go home now to an angry country.
Oh, yeah.
They were knocked out. Turkey, it's their national sport.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is SEC football. You know, but you know, we don't take a soccer loss as big here. They came out and played with pride.
Mm-hmm.
And they, with their 30% possession, said, it's not about me. It's about getting that ball in the goal. And by God, they did whatever they could do. And the last play, I've watched it 10 times. The ball crosses across the box. The guy, our goalie, comes out, makes it, it's called making yourself big. He just charges the guy.
Sure.
And insanely just trying to not let the shot. The guy doesn't take the shot. He just blindly passes it across the middle. And we had four defenders in the penalty, in the goalie box.
Right.
And you and I agree, none of them moved.
They froze. It was like they froze. Our last minute here. Does the USA team have a serious shot at winning it all?
They do, despite what happened last night. Despite what happened last night, we had nine of our subs on the field. There were moments of glory. We did, in the last 15 minutes, put in our star, Christian Pulisic. He's been a little injured. We put him in just to get him some fresh time. He was unguardable.
Mm-hmm.
He was moving around at will. And so when we get our 11 starters in, when we play Bosnia-Herzegovina on Wednesday, it'll be the team that won the first two games.
Okay.
And I said this earlier, and you and I are both football fans. You know, there's always Coach K in basketball always used to like to lose his last game before the NCAA tournament because nobody wins seven in a row.
Right.
You only have to
win
six in a row to win the tournament. And that's where we are now. Now we're in the single elimination. It starts over again, and they're going to come out to play. This may fire them up a little bit.
Wow. Great. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Mayor Tom Arsenault, if you missed our convo with him about the $1 million EPA grant for Cross Bayou, he will explain what's going to happen, what he'd like to see down there. It's kind of interesting stuff. That's coming up, 101.7 FM and 710 Key.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Key.
Coming up next, Mayor Tom Arsenault on the $1 million EPA grant the city is getting for Cross Bayou. What's the plan? He will explain that coming up next.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Back 101.7 FM 710 Keel. My friend Scott Hughes in for Mike Martindale, and we're joined on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline by Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Sure, good morning.
Got some good news. Looks like you've gotten a grant from the EPA to do some work across Bayou and Leadbetter Heights. Explain what you've gotten.
Well, we had applied. We have some property that we own and some property adjacent to it along Cross Bayou on the south side of Cross Bayou. This is going to involve the Deanna Produce building that the city owns,
right?
And some adjacent property, and then some property in Leadbetter Heights, and perhaps along Texas Avenue. We're not necessarily restricted to those areas, but that was our targeted area for the grant. So we're very excited about it because we know, or at least we suspect in that area, there was some industrial development, industrial activity in that area a long time ago. And we suspect that there is some contamination in that soil. So to put it back into commerce and be able to do something with it eventually, we need to clean it up.
Good morning, Mayor. This is Scott Hughes. Good morning. So if I understand you, is this more of a brownfields, what we'd call a brownfields type grant to help you physically clean something up, not a planning grant?
It is not a planning grant. It is for investigation and cleanup.
Okay, and that would be for the property that only the city owns. Could it be for property that other people own as well?
I'm not entirely sure of that, but I believe the answer is yes.
How soon do you anticipate that to start, and will the city have to spend some money on top of the $1 million from the feds?
There's no local match to this, so this is $1 million that we don't have to put any up for.
Okay, you know how old I am. You know, I go back a minute. We passed a bond issue in 1996.
She's been doing research this morning, Tom. You
know,
be ready.
You know, I have this in my back pocket. I always have. We did a bond issue in 96 to purchase land for use for a public park on Cross Bayou. We have purchased some land. I think we purchased that Deanna Produce Building under Mayor Perkins. We have purchased some other land. And we still have, at last report, I think about $3 million or $2.5 million from that 96 bond issue to purchase land and build a park on Cross Bayou. A, are you aware of that? And B, are we headed in that direction finally?
The answer to A is yes. The answer to B is what we'd really like to do is to combine that with some other development that would produce a park, but would also might also produce some other kinds of development along Cross Bayou.
Like, give me some idea, because I love that part of that. When the city owns waterfront property, I am so excited about that. What kinds of things would you like to see there?
Well, one of the things I'd really like us to possibly see is a hotel. You know, that Deanna property is right across the railroad tracks from the Hilton, and it would something like a hotel there would, or other developments. You know, we seriously looked at selling or long-term leasing the Deanna property to a produce company for a market and a headquarters. Unfortunately, the Deanna building is not structurally sound.
Mm-hmm.
That's what caused that deal to fall. They just couldn't use it. So we need to look for something that would perhaps complement the convention center. But we're open to any ideas that somebody may have if they bring their own money.
Right. A hotel would be financed privately, I assume. It's not going to be a city-financed hotel.
Correct.
Do you have any nibbles on that yet?
Oh, I have. There are always people who are expressing an interest, but we haven't had. I would say the bobbin has bobbed a couple of times, but it hasn't ever gone under the water.
And so, Tom, you're talking about and Cross Bayou and developing that area. So is this in a way to support the convention center? I know the new state office building is sort of just up the road nearing completion.
Right.
Is that the stretch of the bayou you're looking at, that south shore along that part of downtown?
Yeah, it runs along and behind the convention center. You know, that McNeil Street, for example, one of the things that we might do at some point is to improve half a block of McNeil Street that runs behind the convention center. There are lots of ideas. This makes those ideas come more to the forefront because we can do something. We now can do something that might help somebody develop that property.
Would the city be, if you got some folks that were nibbling on it, maybe 50 Cent, maybe, you know, who knows, would the city be interested, once you get it cleaned up, because nobody's going to come in and buy it if it needs cleaned up, but this, you hope, will take care of the cleanup and make the property more marketable, I would assume.
That's what our hope is, yes. We hope that this will clear this property and enable us to make it available for development or to develop it ourselves. As you said, there is money in there for a park. I would rather use that park as leverage for a greater development.
The Deanna Produce property, we spent, I think, $460,000 on it. Do we know the value of it now? Is it worth more, less?
I don't know. I don't know what it's worth. I'm trying to remember, in connection with the other proposed deal that we were working on, I don't remember whether we had it appraised or not.
Okay.
But that unfortunately that building is going to have to be demolished.
So at this point, that's more of a land deal now. Is that what you're saying, Tom? The building's not structurally salvageable, but the land holds value.
Correct.
How long would you think, Mayor, that it's going to take to do the cleanup and any remediation that's needed?
I don't know. I'll have to talk with our environmental manager, Wes Weiss, Weitsch and see what we, you know, what it will take. We've got to run some, we got to do some cores and run some tests and that kind of thing to find out exactly what needs to be done, but we're going to move on it as quick as we can.
And I guess last question, Tom, we're getting, what kind of timeline you're on? When do you get the money? When do you have to spend it by?
We will get the money shortly. You know, after you get this grant, then you've got grant agreements and those kinds of things. So we've got to do that. It may, I may have to get a council resolution to accept the grant, and that will move forward. I would hope that we would have the money before the end of the year and begin to work on it.
Mayor Tom Arsenault, thanks for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Sure enough. Thank y'all for calling.
Thanks, Mayor.
1017 FM, 710 Key.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, there's a lot happening this weekend, and I'm
you're doing some things.
I'll be busy this weekend. I want to remind you too that we're going to pay respects to former Mayor John Hussey. His funeral visitation is today from 5 to 7. At Osborne Funeral Home. The funeral service is tomorrow at 11 a.m. It's at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church out there on Fort Norris Lucas. And he was special to me. I've told a couple of the stories, but John Hussey actually came to my wedding. I mean, many, many, many years ago. He was the mayor when I came to this town as a 21-year-old green reporter, and was so welcoming and so loving, and helped me immensely on, because I was in charge of, I say in charge, I was the person that was covering City Hall at the time. They were in the old police station and he was mayor, and I've always thought fondly of him. So I will be there tomorrow.
John Hussey, beyond being an excellent mayor, one of the best in Shreveport's history, was a fabulous human being.
Yes.
And like you, when I first got into the advertising business, I worked with a woman named Judy Williams. She was active at the time. Sure. Carter Advertising, Williams Public Relations. John was our client. We did city business, and I knew John. He was my client when he was the mayor. And what I'd like to say, I got to speak about John, and he was there a few years, just last year. Cedric Glover held something, a sesquicentennial kind of celebration deal, and they asked me to come speak on behalf of John. And so I was honored to speak. He was there. And the point I made then was, beyond being a great mayor and a great human being, what I remember John for was his belief that government and that civic should involve everybody.
Yes.
And John was famous for hiring women and putting them in positions, Judy Durham and other people.
Yes.
He's famous for a lot of what we call the adults in the room today were people that got hired under John Hussey. And he was a fabulous mayor.
And I will remember the time in 1988 when our city was exploding. We had the Cedar Grove riot. There was racial tension. There were lots of turmoil in our community. John Hussey was the adult in the room.
That was the project I worked on. First time I ever saw CNN. They came to town for the Cedar Grove riots and the marches.
He was calm. He didn't panic. He did everything he could to make sure that we calm things down and we let things try to get back to normal. And he had all his staff do the same. I watched a grown-up that day.
Held
those
community
days.
Meetings.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes, he was the mayor of Shreveport, and I believe Don Jones at the time. He and Don Jones were great friends. Donnie spoke at the event I spoke at.
Right.
And spoke as well. And Hussey was one of the first ones that realized the growth of Bossier and that partnership.
Don Jones is one of the honorary pallbearers.
They were great friends, and that began a real understanding that two communities had to work together, that they weren't enemies.
Absolutely. And tomorrow evening, by the way, you're invited to the Gentleman's Cooking Classic. Convention Center downtown. The doors open at 6. I think you can still get tickets. I'll be down there earlier. I'm one of the judges. It's a benefit for Southern University Shreveport. If you love good food, this is food cooked by our mayor, cooked by our sheriff, cooked by all the local dignitaries. It's good stuff. Now, they have chef helpers, some of them, but it's a huge event.
And if you're going to the funeral for Mayor Hussey, if you're going to the Southern Gentleman's Cooking Classic, if you're just going to the house, go vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Election tomorrow, 7 a.m. The polls open. They close at 8 o'clock. It's a big deal. So who will be our next senator? We're naming a couple of the contestants tomorrow. Thanks for spending a week with us. We'll see you on Monday.
You've invited me back. I'm going to come.
Okay. I appreciate that. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.